Good afternoon, everyone. Well, to start the message today, I'd like to turn back to Genesis chapter 12. Genesis chapter 12. We're going to read a little bit of a story about Abraham and Sarah. This is back when they were still Abram and Sarai. And I think you're going to remember the story as we start to go through it. It's really one of the only examples of kind of the black eye of the character of Abraham as it's revealed in the Bible. And it's through their adventures in Egypt. We're going to start in Genesis chapter 12. We're going to just drop right into the story in verse 10. We'll read Genesis 12, 10 through 13. It says, "Now there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down to Egypt to dwell there, for the famine was severe in the land. And it came to pass, when he was close to entering Egypt, that he said to Sarai, his wife, 'Indeed, I know that you are a woman of beautiful countenance, not unlike my Sarah. Therefore, it will happen when the Egyptians see you that they will say, "This is his wife," and they will kill me, but they will let you live. Please say, "You are my sister," that it may be well with me for your sake, and that I may live because of you." Now, yes, this is kind of sort of a technicality that had some roots in the truth, but obviously, Abraham was trying to protect himself here, and it's a great example of relative morality. In this case, Abraham twisted the truth here, thinking that one lie was the lesser of two evils. A little lie on one hand was better than being harmed on the other. Abraham repeats this same dishonesty down in Genesis chapter 12, or in Genesis chapter 20, excuse me. In both instances, Abraham valued his own personal safety more than being honest about his wife, Sarah. Surely he knew about the principles of honesty and integrity, but when he evaluated the situation, the truth of God became relative instead of an absolute. Now, this idea of relative versus absolute plays out in a lot of areas within our lives. And just like in this example that we read, external factors, even subconscious external factors, can play a huge role in our decision-making process. So I have a little experiment for us to try today. Grab a piece of paper if you have one. It's kind of important that you write it down, but if you don't, that's fine too. It's an easy test. It has just three questions. If you're ready for the first one, the first question is really simple. And that is, write down the last two digits of your social security number. I'm not going to steal your identity, I promise. If you don't have a social security number, just pick a random number between 0 and 99. Just the last two digits of your social security number, and you need to look at it just for a second. Look at that number. You don't have to show it to anyone else. Now, the second question is, do you think the band The Beatles, do you think they had more or less number one albums than your number? Whatever your number is, it could be a very easy one, it could be hard, but think about it and write down either more or less. And finally, the third question, how many number one albums did the Beatles actually have? So write down your guess on the piece of paper, just off the top of your head. All right, are we all done? Well, what we've done in this exercise is called anchoring. It's the process in which your mind uses extra, often unrelated information to help you make decisions. For our test, the real question was question number 3. How many records did the Beatles have? It's 15, if you're curious about it. But the interesting part is how you likely came to the answer. If the last two digits of your social security number were low, then your answer was also likely low. And conversely, if the last two digits of your social security number were high, then statistically speaking, your answer will be higher than the average. Now, of course, there's exceptions to every rule and every test, of course, but studies have shown that the answer to this third question is anchored back to the unrelated part of the first question, even though they have nothing in common. Now, these types of studies came out in the late 70s and 80s, and they really kind of came into their own in the last 15 years, and it gave rise to whole organizations that did nothing more than help other companies try to maximize the money they take from you based on how you process all of these other external factors. That's why prices end in 99 cents. That's why grocery stores typically drive you to the right. That's the music that plays in the stores, what it is, the pace of the music, the lighting, the positioning of products, even the size of the carts that you use when you're driving down the grocery store. Just about everything else in the store is driven by this price psychology. Since we are constantly making relative judgments based on external factors, we as humans can be easily swayed by what's going on around us. As in our physical lives, so also in our spiritual lives. And if we aren't careful, we can start to make all sorts of relative compromises, no different than Abraham. We can drift away from thinking that lying is a sin to thinking, well, maybe a little white lie would be better than the alternative. Or working on the Sabbath is a sin to thinking, I just really need to do this one thing really quick. It's not really working, but I'll just take care of it real fast, et cetera, et cetera. The Bible, however, should be a different type of anchor. It should be the source that firmly resets our spiritual frame of mind away from the relative small compromises back to the absolute true values. We know that God is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and his way of life is consistent. It does not change based on the circumstances or external forces, and it cannot be swayed by events going on all around it. What's right is right, and what's wrong is wrong. That is an absolute. Let's notice this principle and how Jesus answered a trick question in Matthew chapter 22. Matthew chapter 22, we'll pick it up in verse 34 down through 40. Matthew 22, verses 34, it says, "But when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together, and then one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him and saying, 'Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?' Well, if you have one that is the greatest, then by extension, you have one that is the least. Part of the trap of this question is that it starts to go down the path of relativism, and it can lead to someone justifying themselves by saying, well, I may have done X, but at least I didn't do Y. I'm not that bad. Jesus said to them, continuing in verse 37, 'You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the laws and the prophets.'" Jesus ties it all back together with an absolute. Loving the Lord your God with all your heart is the way to remove compromises like Abraham in Egypt and like what we do all the time in our own lives. In 1961, Procter & Gamble introduced Pampers as a brand of disposable diapers. And at the time, its main competition was cloth diapers. And although Pampers was more convenient, it was considered too expensive. Now, to combat this impression, they introduced Luvs as a higher-priced brand. And as a result, Luvs positioned itself as the contrast and as the anchor and made people feel that Pampers was no longer expensive because, after all, it wasn't that expensive. In the 1990s, however, most parents had already made the switch over to disposable diapers, so as a result, Procter & Gamble repositioned Luvs from a higher-priced brand down to a bargain brand. And as the result, it made Pampers appear to be more upscale. So parents wanted to be more upscale. Throughout the entire process, the Pampers brand stayed constant. It didn't change. But the perception of the brand changed in relation to the other products that were on the market. In another famous example, when Wendy's wanted to sell more double cheeseburgers, it introduced the triple. Even though nothing else changed, when people came and ordered and they saw the triple, they said, well, I'm hungry, but I'm not that hungry. And so as a result, they ended up just getting the double. And at the end of the day, the amount of doubles that were sold skyrocketed past any other item on their menu. There are countless examples of this all around us in our physical lives. External factors, both big and small, both realized and subconscious, impact our decision-making ability. And they can goad us into making decisions that we might not normally make if we think about it in absolute terms. But we need to put up our shields and to make sure that this same process doesn't take root in our spiritual lives. We need to look to the Bible as a way of life that is presented as the absolute, that the character traits that God wants us to develop in our spiritual lives should never change based on the circumstances around us or any other external factors that might come into play. His way is true and pure. His way is the core anchor. In Hebrews chapter 6, you don't have to turn back there, I'll just read through it real quick. Hebrews 6:17 through 19 says, "Thus God, determining to show more abundantly to the heirs of promise the immutability of his counsel, confirmed it by an oath, that by two immutable things, in which it is impossible for God to lie, we might have strong consolation, who have fled for refuge to lay hold of the hope set before us." Verse 19, "This hope we have as an anchor of the soul, both sure and steadfast, in which enters the presence behind the veil." Well, it's completely understandable if we get suckered into purchasing something unwise from time to time. After all, marketers are paid big bucks to help figure out clever ways to separate us from our hard-earned money. But let's avoid compromising in our spiritual lives and take the absolute principles in the Bible and follow them absolutely.